The following episode most likely contains graphic language, details of violence, and murder, and may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 53 of Murder With My Mother, the true crime podcast where I talk murder with my mother.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
What is up? What is up?
What's up with you? Not too much.
No?
What's up with you?
Not a whole lot. Day 63 of 75 hard. I'm almost there.
What are you going to do to celebrate?
I don't know. A couple things. I'm going to sleep for a week because I'm tired.
But not going any well. Walks for a while, I no. would suppose.
I actually really like the walks. I like the activity. It's been really nice.
Yeah.
It's been, I don't know, it's good. It's like a nice challenge. But yeah, I'm going to just be sedentary for like probably like 75, a week.
75 days of doing fuck all.
Yes, exactly. Basically. So, yep. But hello to everybody that's newly listening.
A lot of new people.
Yeah, we've had so many messages and so much love. And
it's been awesome, actually.
It has been super cool. It's like still kind of surreal, but I don't know. You guys are all awesome.
Super.
I wanted to say hello to just one person. I don't know. I think off the top of my head, Jaden. She's the dog walker I was telling you about.
Oh, she listens. Hey, Jaden.
She just started listening, but she's listened like to every one of our episodes.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's happened to us a couple times where people get on the trajectory and then they listen, like binge us. And
yeah.
I'm like, how can you stand that many hours of us?
I know. Well, I mean, it's just basically like hanging out with us in person, and people always want to do that anyway. So got a lot of people hanging out with us all the time. Just kidding. People we gave birth to or, you know, gave birth to us. To hop into some current events, kind of not current because, again, we're doing this every month, so it's like not overly current, but something that we obviously want to touch on. So it's like kind of current-ish and local. So on Wednesday, February 21st, there was a vigil held at a scene that once held so much horror and continues to for families and those closest to the victims of the notorious Robert Picton. So this actually came in response to the parole board announcing that he would be eligible for day parole the next day.
Like, what the fuck?
Yes. Obviously, we are seeing a theme. Like, if you go to some places in the United States, other places in the world, if you kill one person, even one sometimes, it is in the same circumstances as this. It is like life with no chance of parole or the death penalty, you know?
Like, and even if you do three things in the United States, like get caught with a drug that's illegal, steal a car, and then kill someone, it's the three strikes. Like, you can't do anything else. You'll never get out
if you
do those
things.
Even if
you're with somebody and they do those things, you are usually in jail for the rest of your life. So this issue, obviously, we feel super strongly about and continue to because nothing is changing.
And we don't even mean the theme to be so common. Like,
no.
It's just, it is.
It just keeps coming up because of this country that we live in. So why should he have the chance for day parole? Because
he's not.
No.
And I mean, he was only convicted on 6 counts, but his numbers are, think 50 people.
Almost 50, because remember that disgusting video of him where he's like, I almost made it to 50, which just that alone, like.
So let's give someone day parole.
The magnitude of his crimes are like, it's not just, again, happenstance. Oh, this just happened. It's like he went out. Obviously, they think other people were probably involved, but I mean, that's a whole other episode. But if someone's convicted of that magnitude of multiple
heinous murders,
why should they ever even be considered for day parole? You think he's just going to be like, oh, going to go out for the day and get a job and just like, it's just ridiculous.
Ice cream.
Yeah, he's been linked to over 30 because they found evidence when they searched his farm of over 30 other victims. Yeah. They couldn't.
And they have like conclusive like DNA evidence and body matter. And I mean, it's not just like,
belongings,
this happened at the same time. No.
Yeah.
It's actual evidence.
Yeah. So the fact that he is eligible for day parole, first of all, the families had no idea. This was just sprung on them, which you could imagine.
Yeah, they found out, I think, on the television.
Yeah. And so, again, they all got together to have a vigil to kind of bring awareness to how fucking disgusting it is that he is eligible for day parole or parole in general. Because yeah. I think he'll be eligible for full parole within the next couple years. So although no date has been set for a day parole hearing, this does not stop the families from reliving all the horror that they had been through throughout the years. So when and if he does apply for day parole, the families will once again... Oh!
Sorry, everyone.
Pretty fun.
It's a rookie mistake.
Yeah. Episode 53. Like, we haven't done this already 53 times. It's okay. I've done it, like, probably 10. So, anyway. Not only is that what is happening with Robert Picton, and again, I hate to talk about this POS, you know, to even give him attention, because again, we like to focus everything on the victims, but the RCMP has also asked the court for permission to dispose of over 14,000 pieces of evidence collected during its probe into the former Port Coquitlam pig farmer. So, like I said, all the stuff they found, like, on the farm.
Like, they want to dispose of it because, what, they don't want to pay the rent for the storage space anymore?
I don't know. But the fact is, he's only ever been convicted of 6 murders. There was over 50 women. And that's what they think he's responsible for.
Yeah.
Like, there could be more. But the fact that these families haven't had justice because they have never had, like, they, you know, they haven't had justice. So the fact that they could tie their murders to him and they're going to dispose of all this
evidence. I mean, this case also, we haven't done this case yet because of the magnitude and the attention that we want to give to each and every victim in the case. And that's why it's going to be several parts when we do it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's like diving in. That's why I said right now I don't have the mind, the capacity, because I want to really give that its due justice. And it's, you know, 100%. They all deserve to be. I want you remember with Gary Ridgway,
yeah.
You know, his victims, we like to actually go through each one, name them, say a little bit about, you know, what we kind of knew about some of the victims, at least whatever we could find.
And I mean, this case is also, this is a local case that has, we know families of the victims personally.
Yeah, we do.
And I mean, I went to school with one of the girls, mm-hmm. and they found her DNA.
She's one of the ones that he is charged with murdering.
But he isn't charged with her. He's charged with the other one that we know who's a relative of someone.
No, also with the other one. Okay. Yeah, so there's 6, and 2 of them are people that we know.
And the thing is, like, imagine the people whose DNA was found on his farm, their families just waiting. They're waiting mm-hmm. for justice.
Yeah, for almost 20 years.
And now it's going to be, okay, well, we're going to dispose of all of this evidence because
exactly
we're going to let him out for day parole.
Yeah, so organizers sent a letter to the federal public safety minister, the provincial attorney general and solicitor general, and the RCMP commissioner asking them to preserve the evidence, much of which was seized during the 18-month-long search of Picton's farm in 2002 and 2003. So, I mean, we'll keep you guys updated. Again, I don't know if anyone's checked it out, but we started our true crime blog, Keeping Up With True Crime. So if you guys do want to keep up with some true crime, you can go to www.murderwithmymotherpodcast.com. So, yeah.
It's very well written.
Thanks. I have to say. Thank you. Well, it's kind of like listening to us. Like, I just like to type as I think, like, what the fuck, you know? Like, so... Jumping into today, and as you guys know, and we have covered multiple times, I think at least 5 or 6 episodes on our podcast, domestic violence is a major issue in and amongst our communities. In January 2022, domestic abuse statistics in Canada showed that approximately every 6 days, this blows me away,
I know,
a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. Additionally, according to Statistics Canada, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 8 men have experienced domestic violence at some point in their lifetime. Like I said, I think we've covered at least 5. There's, well, 1 suspected, but it's like we know who you did it.
Well, there's, I mean, multiples. There was 2 in our community in the last 2 years that were pretty high profile.
Yeah. So it's also important to note that domestic violence is widely underreported. Many victims hesitate to report due to fear, shame, lack of trust in authorities, to name a few.
Well, and even the inability to get away from their abuser.
Exactly.
And not being kept safe by the justice
system. Yeah. So domestic violence affects individuals of all genders, but women are disproportionately affected. Statistics Canada reported that in 2018, women accounted for 79% of police-reported intimate partner violence crimes.
And the crazy thing is that once a woman is pregnant, they're at even higher risk.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Barriers to leaving a domestic relationship can be significant and complex, making it challenging for victims to escape abusive situations. Some of the barriers include financial dependence, fear of retaliation, isolation, emotional manipulation, cultural and religious pressures, and lack of legal resources. When the abuse escalates to extreme violence and the abuser seeks to exert ultimate control over their victim, which most of the time is when they're trying to leave the relationship, common scenarios sometimes include lethal violence, murder-suicide, stalking and intimidation, killing oneself and killing children.
Yeah. Or using that as a threat.
Yes. And it's crucial for victims of domestic abuse to have access to support services, including shelters, hotlines, counseling, and legal assistance to help them safely leave abusive relationships and rebuild their lives. Additionally, raising awareness, providing education on healthy relationships, and holding perpetrators accountable are essential steps in preventing domestic violence and reducing the risk of lethal outcomes. Now, in Canada, studies have shown that intimate partner violence is a leading cause of homicide for women and that pregnant women are particularly vulnerable. Research indicates that between 10 to 20% of pregnant women experience intimate partner violence, and it significantly increases the risk of homicide during pregnancy or shortly after giving birth.
Like, how crazy is that? That's the most intimate experience you can have, is bearing a child, being pregnant.
And bearing someone's child who's going to then murder you. So the case we are covering today made headlines in our city in 2006 when the sudden disappearance of 31-year-old wife and mother, Manjeet Pingali, ended in the most shocking discovery and outcome, and has shockingly made headlines again within the last year as the offender has been fully paroled back into the community. And you guys know, it goes without saying, you know how we feel about this because we say it every fucking episode.
Yes, we do.
Do you have your glasses, or am I freeballing this whole thing?
No, I got it. I got big print today.
All right.
You guys could probably read it
from space.
From outer space, if you're up there.
Mm-hmm. She loves when I say that. I'm like, what the fuck? You could see that from space. Astronauts are
your
probably.
Turn will come.
I know.
And then I'll laugh my ass off at you. So Manjeet Basra was born on July the 4th, 1975, to Resham and Sharner Basra.
Surrender?
Yeah. Surrender Basra. Sorry, Surrender. Manjeet had a sister named Jasmine and a brother named Tour. The family came to Canada for a better life for their children. They spent their early years in the Lower Mainland, where Manjeet made many good friends. She was described as a very loving and always laughing person, and the early years was described by her sister in the documentary Till Death Do Us Part as having the ideal childhood, riding bikes and playing in the neighborhood with other kids until after the streetlights went out, which was at the time I grew up in too. So that's what we did.
Well, she wasn't much younger than you, right? Like two years. Yeah. It was said Manjeet always had a clear plan for her life. She was described as very focused and very determined. She knew what she wanted and went for her lifelong dream of becoming a teacher when she entered UBC in 1993. While she was there, she met a man named Mukhtar Pingali, who friends and family knew as MP. MP was from the small town of Merritt, which is about 3 hours away from Vancouver. He also came from a traditional Sikh family and was aspiring to be a high school teacher.
Her sister Jasmine said that Manjeet's feelings for MP were almost like she was starstruck, head over heels. Here's a man with the same ambitions and the same cultural background. And it was said that MP was Manjeet's first adult crush, and he just swept her right off her feet.
Friends and family instantly took to MP. He was said to be friendly and sociable and very outgoing. And according to her sister, as far as her parents were concerned, he was the perfect boy to bring home in their eyes. He was seen by her family as responsible and trustworthy, and they trusted him with their daughter wholeheartedly. In July of 1997, MP and Manjeet decided to get married. Everyone was overjoyed. The couple settled into the city of Surrey.
While Manjit was finishing her teaching degree, MP started his long sought-after career as a high school teacher. The couple was said to have lived their best lives the first couple of years of their marriage, with photos shown of them camping and swimming and enjoying each other's company along with their close loved ones nearby. But a couple years into their marriage, Manjit's best friend says she confided in her that everything was not as it seemed. MP was said to be more traditional and had expectations to have a kept home and dinner cooked for him every night by a wife who was also in the work field full time.
Well, and you see this so much because, like, I first thing I think of is, like, my grandparents. They came from another country, very traditional, like, not obviously East Indian, but, like, unless you thought I was East Indian, but no, I'm not. But Latin American, right? So my grandmother has never had a job, has never driven a car, has never had like any kind of independence. It's like my grandfather went to work every day until like recently and he's like 80, but like, you know, he was the breadwinner. He was the, and she just kept the home, and raised the kids.
And she serves everyone that comes
still,
to the
she
house.
Can barely stand up. She's like, yeah. Takes her like so long to stand up, and the men, still nobody gets up to help her. Now my grandpa is obviously, you know, when you live with someone for that long, but the fact is when you raise somebody and they see that, you're normalizing that, right? So when you are integrating into a Canadian culture, women have rights. Women want to work. Women are not the only ones that need to keep the house, keep, you know, raise the children. That should be two people doing that together.
But it's crazy because when I had you, obviously your dad came from South America and when he was quite a bit older, like he was 18. Mm-hmm. And I remember even coming home from the hospital with you, like I was in fucking labor for 76 hours. Like, yeah. And I was 18, like I didn't even know, like, what am I even supposed to do with this thing? Like,
yeah.
And I was expected the day that everyone came over, like the day after I got home from the hospital, mm-hmm. after I had breastfeeding coaching, because I couldn't even do that, yeah. to like cook dinner and serve everyone yeah. dinner.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like when a child sometimes is raised with such a very one way, that's what they think. And that can really cause problems, especially in the Canadian culture.
It does, because even if you, I mean, I know from personal experience, when you don't live up to the expectations, they talk shit about you. Like, yeah, you're lazy, sure. you're whatever. And it's not, you know, you just had a baby.
Birthed a human being that you created. Like,
yeah.
So she stated that she was very unhappy and was met by friends with reassurances as to them keeping on. And that sometimes there were bumps in the road, which obviously in the first couple years of marriage, there can be.
Well,
right?
And I think too, with cultural differences, that's kind of a way to be like, yeah, it's fine. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's very just kind of glossed over. Even here it is too.
Yeah. But in May of 2003, and after 6 years of being married, Manjit gave birth to their daughter, Maya. Both were said to be very happy and great parents who eagerly awaited the arrival and flourished once she arrived. Every picture you see of them with Maya, you can just tell how much love was exuding through to that little girl. And she looks like she had quite the personality, because every picture you see of her, she's like hugging them yeah. and like making cute faces. Like she had a lot of personality. They were very loving to Maya, and Maya was said to be a very happy child. But no matter the happiness, navigating the first few years of parenthood for anybody can be difficult. And I think the band-aid effect of having a child in an unhappy marriage, the cracks really start to peer through when the pressure of being a parent starts to unravel you back into your unhappiness. Even more reason to be unhappy when you have a child to advocate for.
Well, that's just it. I mean, your first love, your first true real love is basically your child. So yeah. It really does make you put the standards for yourself, well, for your child up higher, and then you stop.
Well, look at you. Yeah. I mean, you know, you couldn't.
You'll put up with shit when yeah. the person that you're, like, once you have a kid, you're protecting that kid for the rest of, like, with everything in your being.
Well, some people need someone else to advocate for. They can't. And I know for myself, once I had my son, it was like, I'm not putting up with shit,
yeah.
you know? So after Maya was born, MP started to drink heavily. He would go for drinks after work and not return until late at night, leaving Manjit and Maya to be alone. This obviously started to cause issues because the same reoccurring things were coming up. He still expected dinner and to have a clean house when he arrived home, but was able to go and live life as he pleased. And now there was also the expectation that Manjeet would also care for their daughter while he continued to live life as he saw fit.
And it was said that he was not like a one drink type of person. He was more of a binge drinker. As does happen, especially when drinking for the wrong reasons, this would change, like it would change totally who he was, his personality. Things really started to go downhill for the couple then. Manjeet was also not afraid to stand up for herself. And that's, I think, like she's been raised in a country
in Canada,
been modeled for her. And sometimes that would cause them to get into hard-headed fights where each person's perspective is not perceived by the other person. Sometimes she would leave their home for days at a time and take Maya to a hotel until things cooled off. Manjeet was starting to get a different picture of the man she thought was once so perfect. But despite her unhappiness, Manjeet longed to have another child. Their arguments were getting more and more aggressive, and as does happen, stress took a toll on her and she was not able to easily conceive.
Yeah, it was said that one night their fighting got so out of hand, like it got drastically worse, and Manjeet reached for the only thing I guess that was close to her, and it happened to be a bottle of auto bleach spray, and she just sprayed him in the face with it, which screams to me like desperation and complete like, okay, you know, these people should not be together if it's going to take that, especially once you have a child. Like your children can't witness things like that, right?
And once you get to that point of, I mean, every relationship should have boundaries. And once you're doing things like that to each other, the boundaries are, there's no more boundaries there.
Everyone around them was anticipating the marriage ending in divorce, but in the summer of 2006, to their families and friends' shock, they announced that Manjeet was pregnant with their second child. They both seemed to be very excited, and those close to them were happy, but also concerned because they knew that the couple had been through, like what they had been through in the recent years leading up to this joyous moment. On the morning of Thursday, October 19th, 2006, Manjeet's parents received a call from MP stating that he needed them to come over and get Maya, as Manjeet had not returned home on the evening prior after her prenatal yoga class. Those close to her said that it was sometimes normal for her to take a night away if she was feeling at odds with MP, but that she would always take Maya, so this was a strange occurrence.
MP went to work, and her mom called her sister and close friends asking if they had heard from her. None of them had. It was very out of character for Manjeet not to reach out to her close circle if something had happened between her and MP, and those that were the closest to her instantly started to worry as they had still not heard from her. That Thursday night at 11:35 p.m., 26 hours after Manjeet failed to return home, MP called the police to report his wife missing. Officers arrived around 3 a.m. They took MP's statement, and he indicated that he had been home all night with his daughter Maya and hadn't gone anywhere. He said that he had called Manjeet a couple times, called friends and family, and even called the hospital to confirm she hadn't been in a car accident, but also indicated that he didn't overly worry due to her taking time away in the past.
The panic started to really set in when Manjeet still hadn't come home 2 days later. Friends and family started to put up flyers and had search parties looking for Manjeet in the local areas and anywhere they thought she could be. From the outside looking in, MP seemed like a worried husband who was described as distraught and distressed looking, constantly on the phone trying to find out where his wife was and what had happened to her. Officers subpoenaed Manjeet's phone and bank records and started putting together a timeline of where she had been on the night she disappeared. Just after 6 p.m. on the 18th, Manjeet had made four short phone calls to her residence. She was traveling south, which was where her prenatal yoga class was being held. She was also seen just before 9 p.m. leaving her yoga class in her vehicle. After this, it's almost like she disappeared off the face of the earth. No one heard from her. None of her credit cards or bank accounts had been accessed. At first, police considered the possibility that maybe Manjeet had been abducted. They started looking at possible suspects in the area that may have had that kind of profile or background, which I'm sure there's no shortage because we let everyone back into the community. All of those leads came up with nothing, so they started looking a little closer to home. Who had motive? Who had opportunity to want Manjeet to disappear?
Well, on Saturday, October 21st, detectives bring in MP for questioning once again. This time, they focused on the background of their relationship and really if there would be any reason for her to want to leave. As they had learned, everything wasn't as peachy as it seemed on the surface. And by talking to friends and family, police quickly saw that their relationship had been far from perfect. Their life, as it seemed to be on the surface, was not the way it was. MP let police know that recently Manjit had reconnected with an old friend and would talk to them on the phone and go for dinners, just the two of them. He implied that he was suspicious that Manjit was having an affair. Those closest to her were shocked and quickly shut down these accusations.
After speaking with Manjit's friend, police quickly ruled him out and he agreed and passed a polygraph test. On Monday, October 23rd, 5 days after Manjit was last seen, the family made a public appeal. Her sister Jasmine recalls saying to the cameras, "Manj, if you're out there, come home. Maya misses you. If anybody has any information, please call in." And MP also gave a tearful statement. He said, "I'm here today to make a plea that I need your help. My daughter needs your help. Please, we need your help." What the family didn't know at this time was earlier that morning, as a woman was walking her dog on a beach near Roberts Bank that oversaw the Delta ports, she had come across burnt human remains. It's always someone walking their dog.
Always.
Just talk, like, thinking about that, you know, you're just walking, and at first the lady thought that her dog had picked up, like, some kind of, like, beech wood or driftwood kind of thing, and quickly, obviously, to her shock and, like, horror, she realized it was a human body.
I mean, that's my worst nightmare. Yes. Every time my dog goes off always to look at something, I'm like, no.
Yeah, I think it was our second episode, the same thing. Yeah. Like, you know, it was
always cool because dogs have a sense of smell, like,
of course,
so much stronger than ours. The forensic teams were aware of Manjit's disappearance and had quickly started to tie the two together. Although the remains had been burned, the detective working the case, Detective Harj Sidhu, recalled seeing nail polish and a ring, which to this day leaves a lasting imprint on the detective, who is still visibly affected by this memory.
You see that in so many of the documentaries we watch, like the cases like this. Yeah, it brings them right back, and you can kind of see them, like, you know, how emotional they still are about this. Actually, I think he said in that documentary, one of the documentaries we watched, that he named his youngest daughter, like, after their daughter, you know, just to keep,
have the connection.
Yeah.
How haunting.
Yeah.
Although they assumed the worst, they still had to wait for an autopsy to verify if the remains found were that of Manjit before notifying her family. On the same day, Manjit's car had been discovered in the parking lot of Green Timbers Park in the North Surrey area of Whalley. There were no visible signs of a struggle, no forced entry, and no blood in or around the vehicle to indicate that foul play had occurred there. Investigators were also not able to locate Manjit's phone in her vehicle or where she had been discovered.
On Thursday, October 26th, dental records confirmed that the remains located were that of Manjit. The cause of death was determined to be strangulation, as she had broken bones in her neck that could only be caused by severe pressure associated with being strangled. There was also no soot in her lungs, which meant Manjit was killed before she was set on fire. It was also determined during the autopsy that the gender of the baby Manjit had been carrying was a girl. Manjit's friends and family were absolutely devastated and heartbroken at this horrible loss. Their worst possible nightmare had come true. They had so many questions as to who would take Manjit's life in such a horrific, brutal way. Police also wondered what kind of monster they were searching for. As they narrowed down the list of close people to Manjit, something else came to their attention. MP's brother, Sukhvinder, or known to friends and family as SP, became someone they focused on. While he was in Vancouver attending college, he was living in the couple's basement. Manjit and him were known to clash, as he was somewhat of a party guy and always wanted his older brother to join in his festivities. We see that all the time. You know, it's like, I mean, somebody who doesn't want to party can't be coaxed into going partying, so obviously the husband did want to go. Well, I mean, you...
I'm just kidding.
Take a little, but...
Just using excuses.
Now, we know that MP struggled with drinking and that this was a trigger for issues in their marriage. this could have not gone over well with Manjit, especially him living in the basement. Like, you know, it's
always there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just more of an excuse to...
Mm-hmm. Manjit give MP an ultimatum. Either SP moves out or she does. MP ultimately chose for his brother to move out, but this caused tension within the family as now they looked at Manjit as someone who had kicked SP out of their home. And we know, culturally, in many of different cultures, it is looked down upon to go against your in-laws or really even have any opinion, let alone say in what your husband is doing.
Yeah, and I mean, to like men in general. Having ostracizing any member of your family, mm-hmm. no matter what they do, is mm-hmm. not very common.
Police questioned SP. He said that he was at home with a friend the night Manjit disappeared. Police verified his alibi and he was quickly ruled out as a suspect. At this time, those close to the couple had noticed a change in MP and say he started acting strangely. He was described as being very aloof and angry whenever the family would try to get answers. At this time, suspicions toward MP grew amongst their inner circle.
I can't imagine also being in someone's inner circle and even contemplating that they're acting strange after this had happened. Like, that's the creepiest.
Well, and you think about it, because realistically, she was a teacher. She was an elementary school teacher. She was a mother. She was a friend. She was a daughter. She was a wife. So out of all of those things, it's like, it's not like, you know, there's not many things to put together. Like, no. You know, and I mean, especially.
She's not living a high-risk lifestyle.
No. And again, that's never an excuse for someone to be murdered, but that's, you know, there's a much broader, you know, thing of people that could be responsible for this. This
exactly.
is like, especially when you start to
break it down.
Yeah.
MP had initially told the police that he'd tried to call Manjit's inner circle the night she didn't come home, but when the police tried to verify, they received a different picture. MP never called Jasmine, Manjit's sister, and never reached out to her best friend. Police started to doubt things that MP was saying and went again to examine Manjit's vehicle for evidence. What stood out to them was that the position of the driver's seat was set at a setting that someone much taller than Manjit would have set it to, and also the location of her car as well. MP was under the assumption that Manjit's prenatal yoga class had been held in North Surrey, in close proximity to where her car had been found. But unbeknownst to him, it had actually been held in South Surrey, about 25 kilometers in the opposite direction. On October the 30th, 2006, the family held Manjit's funeral. It was said that MP was standing in the entryway and was visibly sobbing and needing to be assisted to stand and kept falling over and over. Police and other people attending noted that it didn't feel genuine and it was almost like he was putting on a show. Although we know that not everyone grieves in the same manner.
Well, we know that not everyone grieves in the same manner, but when you're the only person that people are suspecting of this and you're like, oh, you're like sobbing falling. And falling and all these things, which, I mean, if you know that you just murdered your pregnant wife, maybe you would be mentally ill. I mean, I don't know, like, you know, living with that. But I mean, yeah, obviously if you're putting on a show, it's
been a cold dick for the last 2 weeks while everyone's wondering.
Exactly.
You got to make up for it.
Yeah. After piecing together all that they had, that narrowed their attention on MP as the primary suspect in Manjit's murder. He thought she may have been having an affair. In his eyes, she had forced him to kick out his brother, and that had basically stripped him of his masculinity. The car's location and the seat setting were all matching to MP driving the car and leaving it where it was found. And even though all this evidence was circumstantial, police believed it was being pieced together bit by bit and becoming more of a whole picture. As a team of up to 80 officers worked this case, they were desperate for leads that would point them in a concrete direction. They were out gathering video and other sources of intel in and around the Pingali neighborhood. They searched for anything that would link MP to his wife's murder. After 4 weeks of hard work, they finally caught a break in the case. Police went to a gas station only about 2 blocks from the Pingali's home. On the night of Manjit's disappearance, MP can be seen on the store's surveillance purchasing a day-old newspaper and a lighter at 12:55 a.m. I don't know what you would need a lighter and old newspaper for at 12:55 in the morning other than starting something on fire. This footage completely contradicted MP's account of that night, as he had stood by the story that he did not leave the house at all the night Manjit disappeared. This footage blew MP's alibi completely to pieces, and to top that off, MP was not a smoker, which made the purchase of these two items that much more suspicious.
In January of 2007, detectives finally had enough evidence to seize MP's cell phone. And while looking through the records, they came to the shocking discovery that the serial number once associated to Manjit's phone was now linked to MP's, meaning that he had taken out his SIM card and put it into Manjit's phone. As Manjit's phone records had indicated that she had been in possession of her phone on the way to her yoga class, this meant that he had been in possession of her phone since the night of her disappearance. And she did, in fact, return home that night, obviously, if he was in possession of the phone.
Ballsy thing to do. Imagine just stupid, murdered really. You and then just took your phone. Like, maybe no one would really notice you, maybe. But, like, you know, like, what if, like, he was around her sister or around, you know, like, I think I would be the only one to notice, like, that's my mom's phone. Like, but, you know, like, people around and, like, the pictures she would have on that phone, all this stuff is stored
on
your phone.
It's really, like, I mean, that's creepy on so many levels. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, haha, I have the phone and no one's noticing.
Yeah. On March 11th, 2007, Mukhtiar Pengali is arrested and charged with the second-degree murder of his pregnant wife, Manjit. His brother SP was also arrested and charged with being an accessory after the fact, but those charges are later stayed after a review of all the evidence. MP still did not admit his guilt or involvement and continued to deny having anything to do with his wife's murder. Although there was never verification of this, police believe that Manjit went to her yoga class and returned home later that evening. They believe there was some sort of altercation with MP, possibly about where she had been that night or the suspected affair. They believe he had a moment of rage and strangled Manjit to death. He then drove to the gas station, leaving his young daughter home alone and purchasing a lighter and a newspaper, as he was seen on surveillance doing. He then drove about 30 kilometers to the Delta port where he dumped Manjit's body and set it on fire. So I think it's, what is it, if you're ever strangled, I'm pretty sure I have this in here somewhere because this gets me every time. If you're ever strangled in a relationship, it's like 700 times more likely that that person will kill you.
Yeah.
So in November 2010, MP went on trial. The jury heard from multiple witnesses and about the evidence and the turmoil the couple had been experiencing. There were also excerpts from Manjit's diary read where she expressed her feelings and concerns of depression and being on medication after the birth of their daughter, as she didn't feel supported, as well as she was scared and hopeless about their marriage and that when he drank, he became upset and mean. On February 4th, 2011, he was found guilty of second-degree murder. On March 17th, 2011, he was sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole for 15 years.
He did eventually take responsibility for the murder of Manjit and described having angry thoughts about murdering her numerous times before he actually did it. In October of 2021, the Parole Board of Canada granted MP permission to take unescorted temporary absences, otherwise known as UTAs. In July of 2022, MP was granted day parole and obtained full-time work with an unnamed company, according to the Parole Board of Canada. In October of 2023, the Parole Board of Canada granted Mukhtiar full parole. His release comes with a number of conditions, including a ban on contact with his wife's family, including their daughter, without the permission of his parole supervisor. He must also report any romantic, sexual, or platonic relationships with women and may not live with anyone without prior approval of his parole supervisor.
Like, do they have someone following him around every day to make sure that he's doing all of these things?
Probably.
Yeah, because it's just how our justice system works. It's just protecting women out there. Other conditions include a ban on buying or drinking alcohol, and the requirement he participate in a domestic violence treatment plan. The panel decided that Pengali doesn't present an undue risk and should be given the chance to reintegrate into society. corrections official. Sorry if you can sense the sarcasm in my voice. I'm trying to read this as serious as I can.
Seriously.
Corrections officials told the parole board that Pingali participated in self-improvement programs while in prison and successfully completed several temporary absences. Several? And then they're just going to be like, okay.
Yeah. You've been good, so.
Pingali demonstrated that he had accepted responsibility for his actions and choices, including his initial struggle during incarceration, the board was told. The parole board, yeah, poor guy. The parole board said MP took a number of steps over the years to address his risk factors, but that intimate or domestic relationships continue to pose a risk and must be approved in writing.
What?
As you all know, we are all for healing on Murder with My Mother here, and I believe that not all people that do bad are bad. But we also know, you know, there's room for growth and for change and education and, you know, take all those courses. But when you brutally murder your wife and then you burn her body and you concoct a story that the families, your friends, the public, the country, every single person is, you're lying to them and you're covering just to cover your tracks. Like, you should remain in jail for the rest of your life or longer than 12 fucking years.
Yeah. And I mean, you've taken everything else you feel for anyone else, including your child. You've taken your child's, both of your child's children's parents away.
Yeah. Well, and one of your children.
Yeah.
You have literally murdered your wife and her baby that was in her, you know, that she was pregnant with. So Manjit's sister Jasmine and her husband gained custody of 4-year-old Maya and have raised her ever since. Her sister says that Maya is just like Manjit and she tries to fill that hole of losing her mother with just with love. And it looks like she's doing an amazing job raising her. And in 2007, with the help of Manjit's teaching partner, Surrey Cares set up a yearly memorial scholarship in honor of Manjit. And it is given to a student who attends Northridge Elementary, which is where Manjit worked, and then later goes on to attend Panorama Ridge, the high school. The scholarship started out at $500, but has gone up over the years. And the best part about this is it's presented by Maya.
Aww, so, that gives me goosebumps.
I know. If you would like to become a donor to this scholarship and cause, you can go to canadahelps.org/charities/Surrey Foundation/Manjit Pingali. So this case and so many other cases like it just serve as like a painful confirmation of how little our criminal justice and legal systems care about women victims of femicide and the impacts their loss of their lives have on family members and members of our community. So if you or anyone you know is struggling with domestic violence and needs help, call 911 if you need help. They probably won't do anything for you because, or call 1-866-585-0445 or visit domesticshelters.org for resources. This will be linked in our show notes as well. So that was our episode. I get so mad.
I know you guys don't like, say.
Oh, it's just like, I don't understand. I just don't understand it. I don't understand someone murdering 50 women or suspect of murdering 50 women being eligible for day parole. I don't understand someone who, because he admitted it, and he's healing. He's allowed out of jail after 12 years. That's all her life and the life of her unborn child were worth is 12 years.
Well, and you think about it, like it comes down to once you have nowhere else to go, you have to admit what you've done because there's no other one that could have done it.
Yeah, jail.
But that's like, it's kind of like when your parent tells you, maybe I used to tell you, if you're lying, just tell me and I promise you won't get into trouble.
And I would get into trouble every time.
Yeah.
But I would normally not admit it.
But you still wouldn't admit it.
No.
But I mean, our justice system here works like just admit to what you've done no matter how fucked up it is and then we'll just let you go.
You can just leave, but just write to us to let us know if you're going to get in another relationship because that is how it fucking works. Like, are you serious?
And, you know, you couldn't possibly buy alcohol or get someone to buy it for you.
Right?
I did that when I was 13. Like, same. God, what's a...
I had a fake ID. You just have a, and who's going to... If he goes to buy alcohol, is someone going to be like, oh, you're MP.
Aren't you MP?
Yeah.
You're not allowed to drink.
And, you know, to be said, you know, and I've said this a million times because we are always talking about this. A lot of times people who are nice people and people, you know, I actually, one of my best friends went to the school that he taught at and said he was a super nice guy, like a yeah. super nice teacher. He was, she's like, well, I never took his class because he was like a physics teacher. But he was like, he used to be the person who would organize all the ski trips. Like, he was a nice person, yeah. which cool. But when you go and you murder your wife.
You're a nice person in jail.
You could be a nice person in jail for the rest of your life. So yeah. I just really gets my blood boiling. I don't know. You guys don't know that by now. You guys are getting to know me pretty well. So to take my mind off of this anger, don't murder your wife. I don't have to say that. How come I have to say that on so many episodes?
Don't murder anybody.
Don't murder anybody, but don't, you know, like that's the time. Just divorce. Yeah. Divorce. It really wouldn't be that bad. It wouldn't, I mean, really, it's not like he's out. He's out walking around, so probably listening to our podcast. But yeah, to change the topic, segueing away.
Or Danica smashes the microphone.
Before I'm like, rah. Yeah, so some other things that came up in Murder With My Mother world. We were voted top 10% of podcasts on the internet.
Woo!
Out of 3 million. So that's what, like 300,000, but still, it's pretty good, right?
Yep.
Pretty good.
It's pretty.
We're going to be bringing awareness to all these repeat offenders, keeping them in jail. So 300,000 podcasts, other podcasts around us, keep doing what you're doing. That's great. We were also voted, this one's like a little more niche, top 30 true crime podcasts.
I think we were number 25.
We were. Yeah, it's fine. But there's 30. So we're not last. Top true crime podcasts with two female hosts. So that's exciting, right? Woo! Yeah. And yeah. And we also, another thing, is we have merch. I mean, we've had merch, but we have more merch available.
Yeah, so, we have it available for sale.
Yes, for sale. So if you guys want to buy some merch, hit us up. Or, I mean, it will be, again, remember, it's me. The technical genius that's trying to figure out how to put all these things together, which I'm doing.
So send us your check.
Good. Yeah. Send us a Morse code check. But no, we will have it on our
Murder website. With My Mother podcast.com.
Yeah. And while you're on there, check out the blog. Let us know what you think. If you guys ever have any cases you guys want us to even not cover as an episode, if you just have like, hey, bring awareness to this. Hey, this happened, whatever. Like, and we haven't touched on it. Write us.
Yeah, we love that.
Yes, like, I love it. We have a lot of different...
Expands our minds mm-hmm. and our platform.
Yeah. And another thing is actually 2 days ago, I had somebody message us, but I'm the one that's going through, sifting through all this stuff. Another prolific sex offender was just rearrested because they, again, just went and ruined another poor, innocent child's life. When they should have been in jail. So we're getting back to the topic again. It's so weird. It keeps coming up.
It does, yeah.
It resurfaces over and over and over. So that, again, I love when you guys reach out. Yeah, it pisses me off that all these people are able and that they're like, I don't know why they're able to even be out reoffending and doing all of this stuff. But
it really stokes our fire. Also.
It does, because it really, you know, like, what do I have to do 1,000 episodes of like the same fucking thing? Like, I don't know. Justin Trudeau, it's your fault. You know, I like to blame everything on him. Yeah, bring the groceries down. I almost fainted. I spent $600 at the grocery store on Saturday. Isn't that crazy? Carlos had to get some collagen, but I was like, and like two boxes of diapers, but like the rest of it was groceries.
Like, are those groceries going to last you for 3 months?
No, 1 week.
Mm-hmm. I would be like, kids?
Like, we're eating everything organic, but like, that should not. Yeah, but like, no. I used to be able to get everything. It's going into my body.
I mean, I'm still eating Mr. Noodles and frozen pizza, so.
And Takis, I know. But that's crazy. Something has to be done about it. I'm going to start also talking about my grocery bill every week. When we start to do weekly episodes,
it's
I'm going to give
up,
you guys.
Yo, like, I can't even.
No.
I'm one person. And like I said.
One bag of groceries is like $120. And that's for like 6 items.
Yeah. I'm just lucky I'm not shaping any children anymore.
Yeah. Thanks for birthing me in such a fun time to be alive.
You're welcome.
But anyway, like and subscribe. We love the support. We love the love.
Super honored by it.
Yeah. Just keep liking, keep subscribing, keep telling your friends that tell their friends and tell them to stop letting people out of jail. You can donate to our show if you guys want to do that on Patreon. Or you can email us at murderwithmymotherpodcast@gmail.com to inquire about other ways that you can support the show. If anyone's looking to sponsor us, we're looking for some sponsors.
We are looking for some
sponsors. We're picky, though. Yeah. And no gun people. Just kidding. If a gun store wants to, you know, I think everyone should be equipped to keep themselves safe. Right? Is that our Second Amendment?
Oh, I was I'm about to be American, so.
Yeah, mom's support. About to be American. So that's just because she's sick of this shit over here in Canada. So she's just going to go and. But yeah, so mom, am I missing anything?
I think we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was episode 53 of Murder with My Mother, the true crime podcast where I talk murder with my mother. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
What? 53. Was it? No, it was 53. Come on, Dan. I think the thumbnail was 53 last time. No. I double checked. Okay. I double checked, but should I do that again? No. Okay. Bye, guys. See ya. Oh, wait. Hold on. You know what? Decal. We got a lot of views on that video. We got like 15,000 views.
Decal yes. versus decal.
We're wrong. It's decal. Well, if you're not from BC, it's decal. Everyone in BC says decal, so yeah. Anyway, episode 53. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.